What's up, guys? This is Barry White, a.k.a. Luke Johnson, otherwise known as Loco, bringing you podcast numero dos on fansmanship.com. I'm standing here both with O-Train Deluxe and Andy Stevens. What up, guys?
Hey, Luke.
Great to be here.
Today, we'll be talking about some college football and some pro football and other important things.
And some football.
Like football squared. Like who has the best and worst facial hair in all the professional sports. But before we begin that, let's start with some news. As you guys know, unfortunately, there was a plane crash that killed former NHL star Pavla Dimitra. Hope that I said that correctly. 43 of the 45 passengers perished in the crash, so our prayers go out to those families. We hope for the best in that situation. But even more importantly, or not more importantly, but huge news right now is Peyton Manning's neck injury. We're going to discuss that. According to Howie Long, his career could be done, which is big news for Colts fans and NFL fans.
Absolutely. Did he make a Humpty Dumpty reference?
He did. He made a Humpty Dumpty reference, said that Humpty Dumpty's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. So
well, he does look like him. So
he's a little bit like Humpty Dumpty.
I'd go that
far. And before we begin, I promised my cousin I would give him a shout out and say, Chad Lorette, what's up? Today we're going in Marshawn Lynch beast mode.
Here up
at fansmanship.com. And so, guys, let's go ahead and just begin with the topic about Peyton Manning. It's big enough news that arguably the most decorated quarterback in league history is going to miss, you know, opening day. I mean, that's just a big deal.
How long has it been since he hasn't started, Luke?
It's 227 games.
227 games.
So this is second only to Brett Favre of all time.
How many seasons is that?
I think it
was a lot of seasons.
I think it was 13 seasons, and since you have to remember started. This is, you know, this is second to the great Brett Favre.
It's huge.
Who, believe it or not, it's sort of like a streak that'll never be broken. It's like Ty Cobb's streak. I mean, it's 297. You know, is the streak that Brett Favre held, but 227 is really honorable. The guy's known as a workhorse. Like I said, he's arguably the most decorated quarterback in league history.
Well, just think about how many little injuries, little nicks, little bumps and bruises that other guys would have wanted to sit, but Peyton went out there.
Well, it's the NFL.
You know it's serious.
It's the NFL, yeah, and over time, guys get injuries, guys don't start, even the best players. I mean, we know guys like Mike Vick are known for not starting, but there's more Mike Vicks than there are Peyton Mannings, for sure, or even guys who start 16 games.
Yeah.
You know, most teams don't have guys that'll start all 16 games throughout the year because of how physical this league is.
And so what I want to ask you guys, and I want to get your guys' take on this injury. We know that this is a serious neck injury. It's been kind of downplayed by the media until recently. Sure, that was part of Peyton's doing. He had some people on his side that were kind of keeping it hush-hush.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the very injury that caused Sterling Sharp to just end on an on, I mean, he was done. I mean, he played about 8 or 9 dominant seasons. I mean, if you guys remember,
he still had a few good more left in him.
I mean, that guy finished. I mean, I think he averaged somewhere between 80 and 90 receptions a season.
His brother said he was the second best player in his family behind his brother Sterling. Shannon said that as Hall of Fame induction.
He did, yeah.
And when you talk about Peyton Manning, and I was talking to Andy about this right before we went on the air today. When you talk about Peyton Manning and you talk about a neck injury, you think about these injuries where guys just don't know how long they're going to be out for.
You think about
in baseball, you think about like Joe Mauer. When I mean, this year has been a nightmare, in and out, back and forth.
Yeah, neck and head injuries, those are unknowns.
And his head injury, and you talk about Joe Mauer's kind of random knee injuries that just kind of keep coming back and coming back. Guys like to know when they're coming back. Guys like to have timetables. When I don't get a timetable from somebody, when I don't get a timetable from the Colts or from Peyton as far as his return, that's even general. I mean, there's nothing. It's like,
the fact that they went out and got Kerry Collins tells me that it's going to be more than just 2 or 3 games. If it was just going to be 1, 2, maybe 3 games, they would have let Lance Painter play. But no, they went out and got Collins.
As Chick Hearn used to say, it's nervous time, I think, for the Colts right now.
Yeah, and this injury sort of reminds me of, as you were saying, with the Mauer injuries, this reminds me a little bit of Steve Young. If you remember, he had those concussion problems.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was never the same.
Right.
Why? Because he was scared of the hit.
Right.
And if you remember, in the early part of his career, most of his career, he was quite a scrambler.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was like the pre Mike Vick in a sense. It rocked his career, and he was done.
Right.
Now, what does this news mean for Colts fans?
Well, this is what I was thinking about for Colts fans, and also the AFC West, or the AFC South. When you talk about that division And that division has been anchored by the Colts and Peyton Manning. And at this point, that
they've
thing has
owned it for over a decade.
When you have the teams that are in that division now, it's wide open, and
they're chomping at the bit.
And you think about teams like the Texans now that have an opportunity in that division. Yeah. And Colts fans, yeah, I mean, they got to be devastated. They're not top dog anymore.
No,
arguing that.
And I think as we all know, I mean, Peyton Manning, I think we can all agree, is one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play this
absolutely
game. This is a guy who we've seen time in, time again, tear through defenses like it's no one's business.
Mm-hmm.
He's a coach and a quarterback. And he in and of himself has really carried that team the last 3 or 4 years, if we really are honest with ourselves, especially last year. I mean, Dallas Clark goes down.
Right.
So, you know, what do we make of that injury? I don't know. As you said, Owen, no one knows.
It's yet to be seen.
No one's yet to be seen.
But it looks a lot worse than it did a few weeks ago when everyone was saying, oh, this could be a couple games. This could be a whole season. But speaking of the season, we got quite a schedule starting off this weekend.
And we're here on Fansmanship Podcast on fansmanship.com. And that's right, Andy, we have a great schedule.
We do have a great schedule. We're going to open up on Thursday. Tomorrow, actually.
Big Thursday night game.
Big Thursday night game. Hope you guys can all watch that if you're listening. It's New Orleans, the Saints. Champions 2 years ago, and the Green Bay Packers, who were reigning champions.
What a great matchup to open the season.
I mean, it can't get better than that.
Yeah,
we have two of the best quarterbacks in the league going off against each other. Aaron Rodgers, who's just sort of ascended to that level. Drew Brees, who's been doing it for years. Brees has something to prove. They were knocked off last year by an upstart Seahawks team.
Well, Brees has always been that kind of player.
And Marshawn Lynch went up into beast mode.
He's always been that kind of guy, though. Drew Brees has always been the guy that was a little bit too small, a little bit too slow, couldn't quite throw it far enough, didn't quite have the accuracy. He's always had that chip on his shoulder, so I think that he definitely performs a lot better when he has that chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely.
And you talk about the AFC South, I talk about the AFC South with the Colts and how weak it potentially can be as a division. Maybe I think one of the weaker ones in football, along with the NFC West. You talk about the NFC South, though, and that division's actually getting a lot stronger between the Falcons and the Bucks and the Saints. And so between the Saints and the Packers, you have a game that has instant relevance for playoff implications, possibly, right from week one. Kind of like college football season. Everybody always talks about how right from week one it's
well, they're finally getting
it's intensity.
The schedule guys are finally getting it. They're finally putting together something where you can definitely tell they thought about this. And I mean, this is not just a random computer-generated, you know,
This is a fun game to watch, and it's a game that matters.
This is the great game that matters because it definitely is two of the better teams in the league, and this is going to set in motion, you know, who's sort of top dog. Now
the rest
the Colts
of the year
are out. Mm-hmm. The Steelers have been through a lot of hecticness this offseason. I mean, they're not necessarily there. You look up into the AFC, AFC West, you have the Kansas City Chiefs that are, they're favorites, but I mean, how seriously can we take the Chiefs? So you have the Patriots really in the AFC.
Uh-huh.
Couple other teams,
yeah.
So it really is an NFC year, in my opinion.
The NFC is wide open.
Well, the NFC is going to be better. And speaking of a team that's going to be better this year, the St. Louis Rams at home hosting the quote unquote dream team, and
team that people think are going to be better.
That's what Vince Young called them. Dream
team. Yeah, Vince Young was quoted as calling that team a dream team,
Miami.
So I'm going to ask you, Owen.
Yeah.
How much of a dream team is that? And then I want to ask you, Andy, after that. Is this kind of reminding us of the Heatles last year? This sort of concoction of somewhat superior talent.
Right.
But Owen, I mean, how dreamy is this team? You know, I mean,
they're dreamy.
They're super sexy.
I mean, really.
Yeah, I know. They really are for an NFL team. And the thing about the NFL that's always so great that people love, that you see guys like Mark Schlereth on TV talk about, is the fact that it's a team game. And how much of a team game it is, and that it takes all the guys on the field. In basketball, you only have five guys on the floor. Baseball, there's one guy pitching and one guy hitting at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you against him. In football, it's 11-on-11, and it really is every play 11-on-11. And so getting one or two great players in football, you look at a guy like Nnamdi Asamoah that was on the Raiders last year. He might have been the best player in football on one of the worst teams in football, and in the NBA, you can't have something like that. You can't have LeBron James's team be the worst team in basketball. Him being on a team instantly makes them not the worst team.
Exactly.
In football, that's not the case.
It is different.
In football, the dynamic is that those guys have to all play together. And I think the worry, for me anyway, is that you have all these skill guys. You have these guys out on the corners for Philly. You have Vic who runs. but depth may or may not be there. I'm not sold on Vince Young playing a lot. He got hurt really quick too. Heck, the Eagles could be down to their third string quarterback with Vince Young's hammies and how much Vic gets hurt. And if they get there, is their offensive and defensive line good enough to keep them in close games against tough teams like the Giants and the Cowboys and an improved Washington team, who's for me a team to watch this year.
Well, see, I wouldn't put, if I were Philadelphia, I wouldn't have put so much undue pressure on yourself, especially in that division. You don't need extra pressure.
That's dumb.
You don't need that extra stuff. But as far as the comparison to Miami, Miami, they concocted it. The players came together and kind of made it happen. Uh-huh. This is more of a general manager, I think. This is what I think that his mindset was, is, okay, we got a guy like Vic. He was a troubled guy. He came in and, okay, he worked. He worked out great for him. So, hey, why not? Let's just put together some more troubled guys and just have a band of troubled guys that have some troubled past or guys that have made fallen out here and there. And let's try to put them together.
So I totally agree with you guys. And I think that why put undue pressure on yourselves when you are the Philadelphia Eagles, who really, in essence,
no reason.
What, you made the playoffs last year. Yeah. Okay, you didn't do much in the postseason. You have a quarterback in Michael Vick, who's, we all know, has just become kind of a pocket passer, but really he's looked horrible in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Vince Young has won as a starter. He's maybe not there mentally. Awesome Wall arguably is their MVP player. Ronnie Brown is hurt every other play, it seems like. How great is Ronnie Brown? I don't know.
Whether they're good or bad, and we're breaking down week one of the NFL season here on Fansmanship Podcast on fansmanship.com. When you think about the Eagles, they're going to be nothing if not interesting this year. Another really interesting matchup, and moving from the NFC to the AFC really quick here, and it's one of those matchups that is, you don't see that often in the NFL, and Andy and I have talked about this before, is the Steelers and the Ravens. And these are two teams that truly and really do not like each other in a Auburn-Alabama kind of way,
right,
in a college football rivalry kind of way.
Uh-huh.
These guys hate each other.
Yeah.
And so we have Pittsburgh out Baltimore, and this is going to be a huge matchup this week. Baltimore's at home. They're favored by 2.5 points. But this is one of those pick 'em games every single time to me.
Yeah.
I think this year, I mean, when you look at Baltimore, what an intriguing team. This is a team that, in my opinion, has been a title favorite from my perspective the last couple of years. I mean, you have a phenomenal running back in Ray Rice. Mm-hmm. You have an up-and-coming quarterback in Flacco. You had a concoction of...
Shane Falco.
Bolden,
right? They had Bolden last year.
And they still have Bolden, but here's my...
They let Mason go to New York.
Here's my issue with the Ravens is this, and I don't know if it's going to be quite the same game that we're used to with Pittsburgh and Baltimore, is they let Todd Heap go.
Right, mm-hmm. He's in Arizona.
They let Mason go.
Todd Heap's going to be good for Bob.
They let Hushman Zada go.
Yeah.
So what do they have anymore? They have Bolden,
Ray Lewis, and that defense. That's
Ray right.
They always lean on it.
So I know, but I mean. and that's my biggest issue with the Ravens this year.
They had a chance to get better offensively. Right?
Yes, they finally had an offensive juggernaut, in my opinion.
A good, at least solid.
A team that if they stayed together, were really with this type of a season, could be considered an AFC favorite.
I think their GM probably has more of a mindset that we might not have to spend this money, and we could still be good enough to be right there with Ray Rice, Flacco, and that defense, and to have a chance to be there at the end. You know, maybe that puts them over the top. They add a few more free agents. Maybe they're just able to get there through team chemistry, having a guy like Harbaugh, who's a great coach for that system and that defense. But
And there's no question that the Steelers have been in quote James Harrison this off season. Harrison's had the stuff going on. Hines Ward with the drunk driving charge or whatever. So there's been some hecticness there. But according to reports, Ben Roethlisberger is in the best shape of his life. He's married, so he's calmed down. We'll see, you guys. I mean, we never know about Big Ben, right?
Is he still riding a motorcycle?
I don't know.
All right.
But we love the...
If he's wearing a helmet, that's okay.
But does he have a sidecar on his motorcycle? That's my main question.
Here's what's funny about the Steelers, though.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Is the reality of about the Steelers is this. We love to hate the Steelers because the Steelers win every year. That's just who they are. Mm-hmm. They find ways to win. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and move on here. We have another big game. We have the Dallas Cowboy matchup against the Jets in New York. The Jets obviously were the sexy pick last year. Had a good year. Have a young quarterback in Sanchez who continues to improve. And then you have the Cowboys who are trying to improve. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
What's our take on that game?
I think that Romo's going to have kind of a comeback year. I think that the maturation of Dez Bryant is going to go a long way. Austin Miles has gotten better. Jason Witten's kind of like his safety blanket out there. Felix Jones looks really good in the preseason.
Oh, yeah.
And I also think that New York's going to kind of underachieve a little bit this year. All that hype last year, I think this year after that last year's kind of going to be a deflating.
Yeah. Instead of having the three running back system, now they have two. Right. Choice and Jones, as far as I can tell.
DeMarco Murray, the rookie, though.
And DeMarco Murray, too. So they have, you know, they're kind of reloading at that position. They have talented receivers. They have Tony Romo. I think where the Cowboys had such great expectations the last 2 years, I think their expectations are lower now, and just like we always know in the NFL, whatever the prevailing wisdom for me is, whatever everybody says, oh, the Cowboys are going to suck this year, they're actually going to be okay, as far as I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
That's a safe bet.
I think it's safe to say that, you know, the Cowboys win 10 to 12 games.
Well, I think they're going to sneak up on New York and beat them.
They're going to beat New York. I mean, that's the reality.
The Jets?
They're going to beat the Jets. Yes, this is
what. I think
New York. The metaphor for the New York Jets is this. They had the show last year. Yeah, they had a decent year. They put all the pressure on themselves.
Uh-huh.
Now it's the expectation. I mean, it's there. I mean, they're supposed to win games. You sign Santonio Holmes to a ridiculously bloated contract, which to me is sort of a metaphor for that Jets team. The Cowboys, look, they've been humbled. And as Andy said, this team is the deepest team in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the deepest team in football. So let's go ahead and just finish a couple things here. Before we close out, guys, for our next segment, I want to get some sort of schwammy picks in a sense. Let's go ahead and break down those games. Give me your scores. I'll start with Owen. New Orleans, Green Bay. Give me your pick and your score.
At Green Bay, first week of the season. I think the defense is ahead of the offense. 20-18, Green Bay.
20-18. I think with two dynamic offenses like Green Bay and New Orleans, that they actually do put up some points, and I like Green Bay, 38-31.
They both have a solid secondary. Aaron Rodgers likes to move out of the pocket and throw the football. I don't think he's as quick as people think he is. So because of that, I think New Orleans keys on him. They hit him a couple times early. Breeze gets off hot. I'm taking the Saints, 31-20. Now Philadelphia, St. Louis. Let's go ahead and pick that game real quick here.
Oh, it's at St. Louis, so Philadelphia might not beat him by as many. I think Bradford does put up numbers in this game. I think Philadelphia's defense hasn't come together yet. I think that, the Rams sneak up on them a little bit, but don't beat them. Let's look at 28-24 Philly.
I think the Rams do sneak up on them, and they do beat them 26-24.
I have one question for you two guys before I answer that. Is Steven Jackson completely healthy this year?
As healthy as Steven Jackson can be.
Ever is.
I think he's...
If you're a running back in the NFL, you're going to have Nixon.
I think he's 25 to 30 carries healthy. I think Steven Jackson runs on that defensive line. I think Mike Vick gets beat up by a solid defensive core. And I'm taking St. Louis and Bradford by a touchdown, 21-14. Pittsburgh-Baltimore, Owen.
You know, you guys talked about Baltimore losing a lot of their weapons, but they also have a new weapon in Anquan Boldin that they got last year. I think he is just the guy for them. He's the Ray Lewis of wide receivers.
Yeah.
He's
yoked.
He's tough. He's yoked. When he goes over the middle of the defensive back's quiver, he's going to have at least one touchdown, and that's probably going to be the difference in a tough game. I'm going to say 24-21 Baltimore.
That was real close to my pick that I have. I have Baltimore 24-20. I think the game ends in a bit of a back and forth. It's a low scoring game in the first half. They pick it up in the second half. Pittsburgh has the ball at the end. They're down 4 points. They have to go down and score a touchdown. They fail on fourth down. Baltimore wins by four.
I think the Steelers have always had a similar defense to Baltimore. Baltimore's always been the more popular defense. That defense is aging. I think we're going to see that this year. Pittsburgh is not. I think as weird as James Harrison is, he's a beast. They shut down Anquan Boldin, who's historically struggled in big games. And I'm taking Pittsburgh to rally and win that one 2017. Dallas, and the New York Jets.
I'm taking the Jets. No, not that tough. I'm just trying to think of how much the Jets are going to win by. Yeah. Let's go the Jets 35. 35-18.
Wow, Mark Sanchez is going to be putting up 35 on
big
Dallas.
Game.
Huh? Big game. Though.
Big game.
A lot of pressure. Oh,
whatever people expect in the NFL, the opposite happens. That's what I say.
I think that New York is going to underestimate Dallas a little bit. I think Dallas is going to come out and they're going to put up some early points. They're going to probably get up something like 10-0 after the first quarter, midway through the second. Back and forth from there. And I like Dallas to hold on 21-17 after a furious New York comeback.
I admit that I'm biased. I can't stand Rex Ryan. I can't stand Santonio Holmes. Tomlinson is done.
Rex isn't going to get to look at your feet anytime soon?
No. The Cowboys, I'm not a big Jerry Jones fan, but I do like Austin Miles, a couple of those players, and I think Dallas surprises the Jets, wins that game 28-24. Okay, guys, once again,
great
this
pick.
Is Fansmanship Podcast on Fansmanship.com. We will be back in a
moment
to roll on and talk about a couple other exciting things going on.
Got some baseball coming up.
Got some baseball.
We got some college football. Yep.
We got some random mutants at the end. Who's
take
got
my
the
picks.
Best
don't take Owens. Take mine.
It depends whether or not Owens is
drinking. He's a
crazy
man.
And we'll find out, do you have to fear the beard? Be right back.
Here with baseball. Guys, it's almost October. I mean, this is the time when baseball used to be glorious. I guess it kind of parallels now in comparison to college football and NFL.
New Reggie Jackson stories are made.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyways, I mean, we are here, and there are a lot of baseball fans across the country. Let's talk some baseball. I mean, we got the Yankees, the Sox, the Tigers, the Rangers, the Halos
Sox.
Hanging in there, 3.5
Sox.
Games back.
Yeah.
The Sox.
Yeah.
No ma.
Owen, let's go ahead and...
So the AL, you know, the AL is pretty much set. I hate to say it. I know, Luke, you're an Angels
fan. But there is
fan.
One interesting race.
You're an Angels fan, so the
Tigers
the,
and Rangers.
The teams that are in the playoffs, I think 3.5 games is a lot to make up, although it's not undue. I mean, it's doable
it's
if the Rangers collapse.
Three less wins, four less losses is what that
if
says,
the Rangers
so.
Collapse, then it's doable, but I don't see the Rangers
just
collapsing.
No,
they're a World Series team from last year.
I don't think
they're collapsing. So,
and I agree.
You know, we're really looking at the Tigers and Rangers battling to see who's going to be playing the Yankees and Red Sox. So we're really looking at matchups. Which
really... How does that matter? I mean,
because
it's
home field.
It's like pick your
because,
poison.
Well, the Red Sox are the wild card.
You play
team,
the Sox, so you play the Yanks. I mean,
between the Tigers and the Rangers right now, the Rangers have 81 wins. The Tigers have 80. Whoever ends up with the
as
best
of tonight,
record,
which is Wednesday night,
whoever ends up with the best record out of those two would host Boston to start the playoffs. Whoever has the worst record goes to New York. So that's the home away.
Yeah, no,
and I get that, guys. But like I said, we're talking about the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
These teams score a lot of runs.
Yeah.
They struggle on the pitching side of things.
They both have this year, and that's interesting.
I think the Red Sox are just as good on the road as they are
at
home. So it probably doesn't make that much difference.
I mean, the popular pick has been the Red Sox v. Phillies or Phillies v. Red Sox in the World Series. That seems to be a commonsensical pick, obviously.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the race, though. I mean, we haven't really discussed. We're discussing the Tigers and the Rangers being close there. I mean, the Sox and the Yankees, that's what the Sox are 2.5 games back of the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Having that top dog seed is a big deal.
Well, and the Red Sox have been really hurt by,
in the
by
second
injuries
even
this
bigger.
Year.
Yeah.
You know, I know about Clay Buchholz because he was on my fantasy team. But he's had injuries, you know, throughout the second half of this year. And both the Red Sox and Yankees have both kind of got through this year. Not at 100%, and I think it's a testament to how good both of those rosters have been. And how willing both of those organizations have been. Hey, I'm a Dodger fan, and we're on the opposite end of the spectrum as far as willingness of an organization to do the right thing. But you look at those organizations, man, they're built to win even when they're decimated by injuries. You talk about the Yankees and A-Rod getting hurt and all the injuries to their
pitching staff. They just have so many veterans that get the job done day in, day out.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
So.
And then you look at the Red Sox, and it's the same situation. When one guy goes down, another guy steps up, they got somebody in the minor league system that can come in and play a few games.
Yeah.
They got a pitcher who can come in and step up. and do what needs to be done. It seems like those guys, those teams always have guys like that. Other teams don't.
Well, they have two top-level closers, both of them. Rivera and Soriano.
It's almost that their teams.
And the Sox have Papelbon and Bard, who also comes in and throws at 101.
And sort of a curveball in this whole thing is it's funny to say this, but the Halos, who we're saying probably aren't going to surpass the Rangers, I think are the scariest team if they got in, because they have that big three. Right. And Weaver, Herron, and Santana, who can shut down these lineups and win three games. And all of a sudden, you're down 3-0, 3-1.
I think Herron has the experience to do that. I would be kind of up in the air on Santana.
Irvin's got the stuff, though.
Look at here. I'm going to throw out a stat, guys, because you know me, stat
but
man.
Is he there upstairs?
Irvin's 7-1, 2.11 ERA since July 27th.
I'd like to see him from October 1st to October 12th.
And I agree with you.
And it's an interesting point, Luke. I love the point that you make about the Angels. We saw it with the Giants last year. You talk about teams that are built for the regular season and the postseason, and the Angels are a team that's built for the postseason. The trick, though, is to get them into the postseason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you saw the Giants that figured out a way to get to the postseason, and then they're built for it, and then anything can happen. And the same thing, you know, would be true of the.
And the reason I bring that point up is because if we were to look at the first two matchups, those are the Tigers and the Rangers.
Yep.
Both those teams can definitely score runs, no questions asked.
Yep.
Both those teams don't have dominant pitching.
Yep.
So when you're the Red Sox or the Yankees, and you may struggle with that third starter.
Well, Tigers have a dominant pitcher,
but when Max Scherzer
could be that number two guy if he's on. Sure.
My point being is when you're the Yankees or the Sox. Right?
Sox.
And you.
The Sox.
From Boston.
Sorry, Sox.
Pedroia, Papelbon.
Okay, but I wanted to say this.
Johnny
Davis. Amazing show, man.
Okay, guys, hey, for all you guys listening, once again, this is the podcast here for fansmanship.com. And we are talking to Major League Baseball. And I want to say that the way that these guys spelt Sox was S A U X. Now, I'm thinking sort of like in the ghetto term, like Sox. You know, like. I'm still in Marshawn Lynch mode, so forgive me.
Well, Boston's
I'm
not in Alabama.
Saying so.
It's in Massachusetts.
Of course. Central Florida. Yeah.
Sox, Chowder. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to the National League. So we're pretty sure here Yankee Sox are going to move on to the postseason and then beyond.
Yeah.
Phillies, Braves, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Giants. I don't even know why we have the Giants listed. Forgive me, guys, for even bringing that name up. We're just going to cut the Giants right now.
D-bags.
Let's talk about the four teams. The Phillies are really quite 5 wins ahead of the Brewers. They're going to be the number one seed, which looks like they're going to face the Braves in the first round, right? Because the Braves are the wild card.
They would actually face the Diamondbacks, Arizona. Because they have a rule. If the wild card is from the same division of the team with the best record, then they can't play each other in the first round.
Yeah.
So the Phillies would get the worst division winner, which right now looks like it's Arizona by 4 games below the Brewers. And
so
then the
D-backs, Phillies.
Right, so D-backs would go to Philadelphia, Braves would go to Milwaukee.
Dunzo, right? Dunzo there. Let's talk about Braves-Brewers, though.
That is an interesting matchup.
You know, at the beginning of the year, the Braves, I don't know if you remember at our fantasy draft, because I drafted a lot of Braves in our fantasy baseball league that Andy and I are both in. And one of the reasons why I drafted, you know, Tim Hudson, and why I talked about Jair Jurgens being a really good pick.
Tommy Hunter, did you get him too?
No, but I got McCann.
Tommy Hunter's
on. You know, the Braves are more stacked than people think.
I'm thinking of Tommy Hanson.
Yeah. Tommy Hanson. I did get Tommy Hanson, correct. The Braves are a more stacked team than people think. And I think if Hanson comes back from his injury, and we know he's been injured, he's had a bumped shoulder for a while. If he comes back from his injury, he is a frontline starter with him and Hudson and all the bullpen that they have in Atlanta. And anything can happen at the launching pad, you know, come October. You know, I think the Braves are a team that if it's not the Phillies, I think it's going to be the Braves in the National League.
Well, I think the reason why that they've kind of come on here at the end is the presence of Freddy Gonzalez, their new manager, take over for Bobby Cox, who was their manager for, what, more than 2 decades?
But he provided some stability.
But here's the thing. Jason Hayward is their big new star, and he can do no wrong. He's went out and taken a big steaming poop out in right field so far this season. He's hitting about .225. Freddy Gonzalez says, "Oh, you're the next big thing."
And
no, you're
clarify,
sitting down, and we're putting George Costanza out there.
And just to clarify, guys, Andy wasn't calling Hayward a big steaming poop. He was saying he took a big steaming poop out in left.
And in Atlanta, man, that's
they actually had their right fielder's name Costanza.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah.
I'm gonna actually.
He's not balls.
I think it's funny because the similarities between both those teams, the Brewers and the Braves. I mean,
yeah.
We haven't brought that up. You guys are. I'm gonna use your guys' argument on the Brewers side of things. That team has, in my opinion, a healthier pitching staff right now. Zach Greinke's their third starter. He's 14-5 with an under 3 ERA.
They're healthier.
And then you have more. You have more offensive power, like we're saying. You have Hayward, who's the big guy for the Braves. Yeah. He's struggling.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have this Brewers team with Prince and Braun, and these guys can hit home runs and score. And then Hanson's not even healthy.
But I think the reason why Braves are so good is because they have respect for their manager. You know,
okay.
And Chipper Jones is still there; he's a better presence.
Yeah, Chipper Jones.
But how do we know that the Brewers don't? I mean,
well,
that's the
question. That's right. We don't know about either of them because they're both very young teams. And
I mean, is respect even a thing that we should talk about anymore in professional sports? I mean,
that's a bigger topic.
Do any of these guys actually respect these owners? Okay, I'm sorry, guys.
Team, playing every day, traveling with these guys, 162 games. Respect for your manager does go a long way.
One more thing about this series: it's the series that nobody will watch, but I'll really want to see. And it won't get great ratings because it's Atlanta versus Milwaukee. But it's the series that any baseball fan
it's
really
playoff
wants
baseball.
To see.
People are going to watch.
No, and I mean, and here's what's cool about baseball is the Giants weren't, like you said last year, they weren't a sexy pick.
No.
Look at that offense.
No,
it's
way.
Disgusting. That's a disgustingly gross offense. And now with Beltran, who gets paid the money he gets paid, it's even more disgusting. Yeah. And no wonder they're whatever.
Let's have Carlos Beltran has one leg. That'll do it.
You know, I mean, seriously. But one of those two teams arguably has the pitching and the offense to win it all.
Sure. Right.
But then no one talks about them,
right.
You know? And so, guys, once again, this is the podcast for fansmanship.com.
One more thing before we go to break. I want to get your guys' World Series picks.
Oh, World Series picks.
Who's going to the World Series? Who's winning it? Andy?
Well,
Florida Marlins.
I want to say...
Go for the Yoyers.
I want to see... I want to see Philadelphia, and I want to see Detroit.
You want to see them? Who's going? Philly and Detroit?
Philadelphia and...
Wow, Detroit.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the Tigers.
It would be cool to see
the Tigers
in it.
Tigers.
For the city of Detroit, it would be wrong.
That's kind of the reason. You know, I'm kind of picking with my heart, not my brain. But I don't want to see the Yankees and Red Sox in it for once.
Yep.
I'm taking the Red Sox because the Red Sox score runs like it's no one's business.
Yep.
I think they have a more solid pitching staff than the Yankees.
Yep.
In the NL, I'm going to stick with my Phillies pick, though I'm starting to doubt that with the Brewers.
Yep.
And then I'm saying Phillies roll that one. They're going to roll the World Series.
Got it. I'm going against conventional wisdom. I'm going to take the hot and muggy.
You're
going to
take
series.
The Dodgers? Yeah.
Go against conventional wisdom, take the Dodgers.
Okay, sorry guys, one more question. I want to put you on the spot Owens is putting us on.
Let me just finish real quick.
Can I finish?
Braves and Rangers. I think the Rangers are going to do it this year. They're going to come
interesting.
Through
okay,
and
interesting.
Actually make it happen. Braves, Rangers.
I mean, Buster only agrees.
Does he?
But what do we think about Buster? Anyways,
he's a jock sniffer from New York that stays out with the Yankees 24 hours a day.
Okay, not to put you guys on the spot, but in the olden days, I mean, for me, older days, sorry guys if you're listening, you're older than I am, I'm only 30 years old, but in the late 80s, there was this concept of the Super Bowl. I want the Super World Series. Give me two of the lowly teams that you would pay a dime to see play each other to win it all as the greatest loser.
In baseball this year?
Baseball this year.
Okay, one from each league?
One from each league. Just like the World Series, but this is the lowly facing off.
The Dodgers and Royals, let me tell you.
Dodgers and Royals.
Because the Dodgers, they're actually not that bad, but... Things seem a lot worse than it is right now because of the bad ownership.
Yeah, they're only like 4 years
under
500.
Here's the reason: because the Dodgers have been acting like the Royals lately, and the Royals, everybody who's a Royals fan wants them to be acting more like a big market team, and everybody who's a Dodgers fan wants them to be acting more like a big market team.
Interesting.
One of those franchises should be acting like that. One of them, the other one's the Royals.
Okay.
But the Royals Dodgers, I think, would
be. Yeah,
I'll
go Dodgers Mariners. Mariners just falling off the face of the earth like it was.
And you get to see Felix and Kershaw that way too, which would be a fun matchup against two really bad offenses.
I'm gonna go Astros Mariners.
There you go.
Because I don't have to even explain why. That's just horrible. It would be disgustingly wonderful. It would be like seeing the ultimate butterface World Series. Because here you have Ichiro Suzuki, who's a Hall of Famer. Well, actually, you have no one as a Hall of Famer on the Astros, but you have a couple names who are solid there.
El Caballo, Carlos Lee, what about him? Come on.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
Carlos Lee, what is he, like 49 now?
No, he's not a Hall of Famer.
No, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, guys, so once again, this is the Fansmanship Podcast on fansmanship.com. Yeah.
Gotta want it.
Gotta want it. What? We're coming back soon. We're going to talk some college football, and that's going to get serious.
We'll be right back.
It's going to be the biggest, boldest website.
But you can subscribe to it.
The most diamond-crested website you've ever seen in your life.
Go to fansmanship.com, click the subscribe button on the right hand side.
Just start clicking. Just go to the website and just close your eyes and start clicking around.
Bang your mouse around.
That's fine with me.
Absolutely. You'll find something good. Subscribe to our podcasts, and you can also find our podcasts on the iTunes store.
Yeah, guys, so we had quite the entrance last Thursday. It was Canson blowing out UNLV 61-13. UNLV running Rebels were definitely running. They were just running the wrong way.
They were chasing the Badgers.
They were running. They were just running the wrong direction. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
A couple other big scores. We had a big victory there by Alabama. Sort of set the table, I think, as the better team in the country. 48-7 over Kent State. UCLA doing what UCLA tends to do.
What their basketball team used to do under Steve Lavin.
Lose on the road and
underachieve. Just
lose games. I mean, this is a, you know, and we are going to get into that, guys, with the comparison with Georgia. Excuses. They lose to Houston 38-34. We then have East Carolina almost upset South Carolina. South Carolina's kind of been one of those sexy picks this year.
I picked the points on that and took East Carolina.
Defensively, they really struggled in that game. And it wasn't until they put up 42 points in the second half, came back and won that game, 56-37 over East Carolina.
That was probably a fun one to be at if you're a South Carolina fan, too.
Boise State still can't get any love because, once again, what do? They beat up on a really good school, 35-21 over Georgia. And then the other game that we're really going to delve into, guys, is the LSU-Oregon game. I mean, that was embarrassing for the Pac-12.
Well, right? That was embarrassing just because of all the fumbling, having to play a true freshman in there.
That was embarrassing, guys.
Poor DeAnthony Thomas. He'll be all right, though. He'll come back from it.
So let's go ahead and just delve right in there with that Oregon-LSU game. Last week we talked about this concept that the Pac-12, or soon be Pac-16 possibly, maybe couldn't play with that rugged sort of southern Midwestern, you know, conference type of football, which is that dirty, slow-moving ground game that hits you hard and wears you out, and in the last 5 to 10 minutes takes the game over.
Well, I don't think Oregon understood that, you know, it's not going to work going side to side against a fast defense like that. You got to start getting north and south. You got to start getting downhill. You know, you got to start going over the middle. You can't just throw it out to the flat and expect to gain 3 yards and that be okay. No, you got to counter that.
Yeah.
You know, use their aggressiveness against them. That's the best way to beat a team that's that fast, that aggressive. You got to counter, and they weren't doing countering worth a hoot. You know what? I kind of caught myself there because I'm pretty passionate about this, but you know, Oregon fumbled 3 times, once by Barner, who's a senior running back, 2 other times by a true freshman that just threw in there because James was out. He was out with an injury. Barner was out with an injury, so they brought in this Thomas kid that they got from California, and he fumbled twice. One time he just handed the ball right to the guy that fired Garland. Here, have a free touchdown. So
and then,
they'll be back.
And then there was that other big turnover too in the end zone. That redshirt freshman corner just grabbed the receiver. It was, I mean, if that's defense, then I mean, what was that? So I don't know how much of it was just their youth and their age compared to this issue that could be a larger issue than we think. I mean, maybe the Pac-10 or now the Pac-12 and maybe soon be the Pac-16.
Well,
doesn't have the wherewithal to really hang with these conferences.
They're the type of team that once they get it going, they really get it going. That's what they're all based upon: tempo,
momentum.
Yeah, that first game of the season and the last game of the season after the long bowl season that they usually have, they're usually pretty rusty.
Yep.
Now in the middle of the season, when they got it going, man, they're like a train heading down the track.
A juggernaut.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things I think about Oregon is that when you only have a week to prepare for them, as talented as any team is, when you have a week to prepare for a team like Oregon, it's really hard. When you have 4 weeks to prepare for them, like in a bowl game, their gimmickry doesn't pay off as much as it usually does. And part of what Oregon's built on, and part of what Boise State's traditionally built on is some of those fun gadget, hey, West Coast, everybody's having fun kind of gimmick circus. Or at least that's the perception around the country. Now, you look at what Boise State did against Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a
it's not fair because
it's not a fair comparison.
They ran Georgia off the field with straight up football.
Yeah,
they didn't do any trick stuff this time. But I'm saying that's the perception that's out there.
Well, and I think that perception's warranted because, as you said, that is the style of West Coast football. But that's the point, is these teams are playing on the West Coast, and that's the way the West Coast plays. But as I said, last week we talked about this idea that the Pac-10 football, the Pac-12, and then soon expanding probably the Pac-16.
Yeah.
As Andy quote said last week, why run into you if we can run around you?
Yeah.
I think there was something that was proven here, though.
Yeah.
Maybe that isn't the case. I mean, this is another issue we can talk about later. I don't want to get into it right now, but this could be the argument as to why we need a playoff structure, a better playoff structure, because maybe USC doesn't win those championships all those years because they run into a team like an LSU that plays better hard-nosed football.
Right, right. You know? And teams are what they do, and they are who they are.
I'm just going to roll that simple truth, though, and say
they are who they are.
I'm going to go with it. I don't quite know what that means.
Teams are what they do, and conferences are what they do.
We are who we thought they were.
And, yeah, absolutely, Dennis Green. And if there's a conference like the Pac-10, Pac-12, Pac-16, whoever they are, that loses games like the UCLA one at Houston, like the Oregon one, like Oregon State lost to Sacramento State. Yeah. Okay, conferences are who they are. They are what they do. And to say the Pac-10 is down this year based on 1 week is a fair assessment based on 1 week. They could get better, but from the first week, that's what I'm seeing.
And once again, guys, this is the Fansmanship podcast from fansmanship.com. We are talking college football.
How about what's happening this week? How about
what's coming up?
Let's talk a little bit about that. We have some big games here. We have Mizzou against Arizona State.
Mizzou.
Yep.
At Arizona State. We talked about their new uniforms last week. What's your guys' take on that Missouri-Arizona State game?
Well, I like Arizona State's defense. And one thing I want to get into, too, is it seems like people are starting to make too much out of these uniforms. And we're starting to get away from the actual games themselves. And we're just talking about the uniforms, not what's really going on the field.
Sounds like one of those commercials on the uniform.
And, you know, Oregon, they're
it's
the
becoming
one
too much of like
everyone's wanting to copycat
it's
Oregon.
It's becoming too centerfold.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Vontaze Burfict. He is the Ray Lewis of college football. He will be the first linebacker picked in the draft. He's an unbelievable middle linebacker for Arizona State. I like their defense. Mizzou can put up some points, though. They have that spread offense, but I like Arizona State's defense at home. I'm taking Arizona State by less than a touchdown.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Cal-Colorado game. Big game for Colorado, more so than Cal. Not saying that it's
absolutely
not a big deal for Cal to continue this stretch where they beat a pretty good Fresno State team.
It's huge for a school like Colorado.
But I'll say for Colorado, I mean, this is a team that's been down for about 10 years. We discussed it last week.
Yeah.
What? I mean, Cal's been a solid top 3 or 4 program.
Well, actually, this is
their first
10 years ago. Didn't they beat
they had Barnett.
Yeah.
But when he got into the trouble, they've been down.
They beat Nebraska on that Thanksgiving game. They kept running that trap up the middle. Who was that tall, lanky running back they had? I can't remember.
But the Cal-Colorado game is important from a big picture perspective because it's Colorado's first Pac-12 game, is it not? And so going up against an opponent like Cal, who, like Luke said, has been a top 3 or 4 team in the conference relatively consistently throughout the last few years.
Tedford has them ready to go
every
year.
It's never an easy game for anybody. Cal's no Washington State.
No.
And this is really going to set the tone for where Colorado's going to be in the pecking order of the Pac-12. You know, anybody who expects Colorado to come in and just start dominating, coming from the Big 12,
they're just not paying attention.
But if they do come in and start dominating, what does that again say about the Pac-10, the Pac-12?
But they will. Colorado is just,
they're just
not that good of a team
right
now. They're not even close to doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know? They have a new coach. They have a whole new system. What I would like to see is, you know, the interesting dynamic, I guess you would say, of teams coming into Colorado, playing at that altitude, how their win's going to be. Is that going to be an advantage for them? Because these Pac-12 teams aren't used to playing at that kind of altitude.
That's more of a Mountain West kind of altitude.
Right.
You know, and not to spark too much controversy, but I'm just going to say something. I want to make a point. I think that there was a larger implication when LSU manhandled Oregon. You guys might not agree. I think Colorado may have been a 500 team in the Big 12. In Pac-10 world, that might be, what, 8-4, 9-3.
They only won like two games.
They were under 500. So if they're 500 in the Pac-10, that means that they're...
And what does that mean for the Pac-10? And that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So we'll see. So that game's got some cool things going on.
Well, look at Oregon
South
State
Carolina, Georgia. South Carolina scores points like you can't believe. Yep. Happen to have a phenomenal a wide receiver and a running back combo. Georgia's known for the recruits.
Yeah.
I got manhandled by Boise, as we said. Yeah. This is what I call the insecure bowl.
Yeah, totally.
South Carolina scores 42 points to somehow beat Eastern Carolina, 56-37. Right. Georgia, let's go. This is good. Go ahead.
Yeah. So
I was fired up. You
got some fun storylines here. Number one. Georgia hates Steve Spurrier. They hate the old ball coach. They can't stand him. And Spurrier's been digging Georgia since Spurrier was in Florida.
Yeah.
Since the day
he popped out of the womb.
Georgia fans want to punch him in the face no matter where he's coaching.
But these are the fans playing the game.
So
he coaches the Sisters of the Blind. They still want to come.
They still want to punch him in the face.
We're talking about players and pads.
So here's the players and pads situation is that Georgia is a lot like UCLA basketball was under Steve Lavin. And I'm going to make this comparison. Mark Richt is not a bad football coach, and he's a great recruiter. And Steve Lavin wasn't a horrible basketball coach, and he was a really good recruiter. UCLA had talent that came through that system that boggled the mind. And once or twice a year, UCLA would beat a team like Kansas with Drew Gooden and Kirk Heinrich. And I hate to kind of cross over sports here, but we're talking about a Georgia team that has a ton of talent. They get guys who are first and second... first, second, third.
Well, they
top,
compete
top
with
10.
Florida and
their recruiting classes are amazing.
In fact,
and yet every year they find a way to kind of underachieve, and every year they do win one or two of these games that people are kind of wondering about them, and then all of a sudden they win, and it gives Mark Richt a little bit more time to gum up another game or two down the road, and then all of a sudden they win again. So he's always kind of on a tightrope with these fans, and especially this year. And I'm telling you, if he doesn't win games like the ones against South Carolina coming up this week, if he doesn't win these kinds of games this year, his job's in serious jeopardy.
Yeah, Georgia really just proves that provocative nature of athletics, period. I mean, you have these top 1, 2, 3 recruits every year.
Yeah.
You don't win games.
Yeah.
Teams who didn't have the top 1, 2, 3 recruits beat you every year.
Right.
I mean, this is why we had Cal Poly San Luis Obispo giving Cal Poly some love, guys. Almost knock off Wisconsin a couple years ago. Yeah, I mean, this is the way sports are. Utah... USC.
They definitely didn't look good last week in Lincoln. We only have two good players on offense. You don't say that.
Norm Chow's return, right? Yeah. You got
Norm Chow's return. That's the exciting part. Norm Chow coming back with his offense against Lane Kiffin. That's the storyline. Utah coming into the Pac-12. They're not as down as Colorado is right now. They have some talent. So I think this is a perfectly evenly matched game.
It's a good barometer for the Pac-10, Pac-12.
And I think Utah could upset them. I really do.
Yeah, especially with USC down as far as their being on probation. I'm looking out for Utah. This is a game that, because USC's on probation, to me, has so much less relevance, and that if I have an option between this and one of those SEC games, I'm probably going to watch the SEC game. Sorry, West Coast fans.
And then we have one of the classic matchups.
The Irrelevant Bowl this year.
So we have the Insecure Bowl, guys, and now Owen says we have the Irrelevant Bowl. Nonetheless, it's one of those age-old matchups that people still watch no matter what. It is Notre Dame-Michigan at Michigan. What's our take on that game, guys? Does that even mean anything or no?
Coach Kelly
means
stuff
to people in Ann Arbor, and it means stuff to people in South Carolina.
Did you see Brian Kelly last week, the coach for Notre Dame? He about had a stroke and popped
a bang
out of his head, yelling at his
head. I want to say,
what's the matter with you?
He looked like Dave Stevens when I used to drop a pass.
His face all turned purple.
So we're throwing some personal love here, guys, on fansmanship.com. This is our podcast here. Fansmanship.com, check it out, our website. I also want to give some love and some big up to Tommy Gaeta, who is a Notre Dame alum. say, Tommy, you're definitely watching this game, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But as we said, irrelevant. Michigan, Notre Dame, I'd rather watch Cal Poly and what, South Dakota State this week or whatever that
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be, the pageantry is always there. The big house in Michigan always has 100 and however many
they
people.
They sold 150,000 tickets to this thing. They're going to have standing room only areas and all that, you know, they got bad weather coming in. I mean, it's absolutely.
It's a zoo.
So, guys, I want to get into just into one last thing here. Let's go ahead and close up this college football section here. And I want to discuss quickly with the capital K, this Pac-16. I mean, this is not just a theory anymore. Something that seems distant. I mean, we have Baylor who wants to sue Texas A&M because they're one of the four teams from the Big 12 that wants to conjoin and join forces with the Pac-12. We would have Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas A&M joining the Pac-12.
Texas Tech.
Yeah, Texas A&M is going to the SEC.
That's right. So Texas Tech.
Or Baylor or somebody else.
So three really, you know, legitimate teams that would disrupt the order really in the Pac-10.
Well, it would dissolve the Big 12 completely.
Yeah. They go back to the Big Six.
They go back to the Southwestern Conference or whatever they used to call it. Yeah.
And I want to say that USC and Oregon are not the same teams they would be if those teams joined. This is, once again, fanship.com, Fanship Podcast. We will be back in a second.
See
you.
Tracks.
We do want to say thank you, Miles Davis. Actually, check him out. He's a hot producer and really becoming something. We are proud of Miles Davis.
Cayucas product, LPMD on iTunes. Check it out.
You'll notice on this random musing section, you're not going to hear any Andy Stevens. Andy Big Cat is running down the street, stark naked.
God help us if that was the case.
I don't know. We don't know what happened to him. He just disappeared. That's just the nature of Andy Stevens. So,
but he did leave his Super Bowl pick.
So you are stuck with Owen and me here to finish this segment up. We are going to finish it up with our choice for World Series. Our choice for Super Bowl selections, and then our final random musings here about the best and worst facial hair in all of sports. Owen. Let's go ahead and begin here. I want to begin with a funny note here. Best and worst facial hair, or some guys that have stood out to you with some awesome facial hair and some piss poor facial hair in the history of sports.
You know, you got to go back. The first guys that I picture are guys like Goose Gossage with his stash.
That's classic. And just that name.
And the name Goose. you got guys like Raleigh Fingers back in the day, and we're talking baseball guys. Also, there are guys from the ABA, and I don't even know their names, but dudes had amazing mustaches and beards.
I know, it's like
huge dudes that were enforcers in the ABA with big old beards, and those were some men back then.
I mean, here's what I think. I think that all these skinny jeans have done something to the masculine gene, because what has happened to really good beards and mustaches? I mean, we don't have the Burt Reynolds mustache anymore. I mean, look at
Aaron Rodgers had one.
Look at Adam Morrison. Adam Morrison, who, by the way, we want to give a shout out to Adam. We don't know where you are. Probably waiting table somewhere.
Worst stash ever.
Not the worst stash ever, but the guy was so boyish, he couldn't grow a Burt Reynolds mustache.
Well, there's lots of guys like that.
What happened? You know, I mean, what happened to the mustache and the beards? I mean. We had these men that just were men. I mean,
AC Green, I'm picturing with the stash
AC
for a while.
Green, there
yeah.
you go, AC Green, who had a body of like Hercules.
Vlade, yeah. No, it's an interesting thing, and now it's kind of more of a novelty. Like Aaron Rodgers had one, and I heard an interview that he had with the Mustache Association. You should check them out. Actually, they're pretty rad. But let's kind of go down the list here. Other guys who've had really interesting mustaches, especially recently. I always liked Shaq's facial hair whenever he grew it out. He would get it nice and squared off, and it would
works,
make him look
you know?
Kind of tough.
It
yeah.
works because you know Shaq's a man.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean Shaq's a man. You know Shaq is such a man. You know he could make like a 7-foot woman seem like she was you know miniature.
Tiny.
I mean
I always liked Shaq with a shaved head and sideburns. That was my
favorite.
Looks
great.
No hair on his head, but sideburns all the way down.
You know
big
who
old
you know
chops.
Who looks horrible with a mustache and a beard?
Who's that?
You're gonna argue with me because you're gonna think this is coming from inner hatred.
Uh-huh.
But it sort of made his elongated jaw and it's that skinny sort of horsey face, looked ridiculous, was Kobe Bryant.
I knew you were going to say Kobe.
Mustache and beard. The guy
he had was, a goatee. He had a goatee for a while. He never really had a pure mustache.
Well, goatee, whatever. He grew it out pretty good.
He had the goat. But going.
You know, he looks pretty good, clean shaven with that swag thing going on. There's probably too much of it. Now, you know who looks good with it is LeBron James. Because the guy's a man.
Because he had a mustache since he was six.
Yeah. He was born with a mustache.
He was shaving at the age of four.
His mom definitely complained about that. You know, he was born with a mustache. I mean, seriously, you know. Okay, but here are some solid beards, though. I want to give some love to some guys who are men who grow.
One more bad one.
Bad one, okay.
Michael Jordan. The Michael Jordan small stash. Okay.
Okay, should we quote how Andy said it?
He called him Adolf Jordan. Well, he's not here.
Adolf Jordan.
Adolf Jordan was a great gloss for that mustache. Listen, there's nothing about Michael Jordan to compare him to Hitler,
no,
except for the stash. But nobody else could have pulled off the stash besides Michael Jordan. You know, Tiger Woods at his prime probably could have pulled off a stash like that, and that's some bad facial hair too. Dude can't really grow it out as much as it needs to be. So give me some good facial hair.
Okay, good facial hair. Brian Wilson of the Giants. Dude's
not good.
Dude's beard is so thick that guy could float.
Yeah,
you know, with enough air gust.
It's got a weave.
With enough air gust, the dude could float. I mean, the guy could fly like Dumbo. Now, I want to say, a guy who has a solid beard, and I want to give a lot of love to because he's also a hard-working athlete, is James Harden of the Thunder.
Love James Harden's beard.
It's got that Amish look.
Yeah, I love the full side chops of his beard.
So cool. I mean, anybody who can look cool with an Amish look.
He keeps it trimmed enough.
It's genuinely cool.
Yeah, he keeps it trimmed enough. And the thing that I just can't think about is, you know, you play a sport like basketball. Yeah, baseball, you have to run a little bit. You have to move a little bit. If you're a closer, you play for one inning. You're a guy in basketball, man. You're running all day, every day. Doesn't that thing get, like, hot and sweaty and itchy? What do you use to clean it? Do you use regular soap? Do you use shampoo? Do you use some kind of beard cleanser? How does that work? I don't know. But I got to give him props for being able to pull it off in the NBA, where a beard that long is typically not.
It's cool. I mean, like I said, you know, if you can pull off a beard like that and still look cool, and he's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move in here. We're going to segue from the facial hair thing.
A couple of the facial hairs, just honorable mention facial hairs.
Honorable mention. Honorable mention, guys.
One is Scott Pollard, and I had a roommate in college who grew a Scott Pollard beard and Scott Pollard hair.
Now, what does a Scott Pollard beard look like?
God, it's all over the place, just like his hair, man. When he was on the Kings and he was trying to back up Vlade and guard Shaq for, you know, for 10 minutes a game, you know, his hair was pulled up on the side and had like double ponytails on the side that were wrapped together.
Oh, yes, it was horrible.
And the beard to go along with it that was like a half goatee.
You know who's the new Scott Pollard, but he's more talented? Is what's his name? The guy who plays for the Suns.
Oh,
he has the long hair. He puts it in the ponytail. I think he got traded to the Rockets.
Amundsen.
Amundsen is the new Scott Pollard.
I read an article about him recently. He seems like he's a pretty down-to-earth guy. He drives like a regular car.
So is Scott.
And he's like, and Amundsen was like, yeah, with the lockout, who cares? I saved my money. Like, I'm good.
That's cool.
Like, I'm cool. Like, yeah, I don't act like a, you know,
well, I mean,
whatever.
Come on, guys. I mean, all these athletes should be cool with this lockout. They have plenty of money.
They should be able to just chill out for a little while.
We better have no Chapter 9. These guys, you know.
Exactly.
And I want to speak directly to Derek Fisher, because you're supposedly the head of
Players Association. Yeah. There's another good facial hair guy. He grows good facial hair.
He's a little too short for me and stocky.
To have good facial hair?
He's
6'2".
I don't like Derek Fisher.
Yeah, you just don't like it. It takes charges.
I like Robert Horry's facial hair he used to have. He looks cool.
He rocked the lamb chops pretty solidly.
That's pretty cool.
He had some pretty L-shaped, big, bold, wide lamb choppies going on.
You know who would look horrible with facial hair? Is Tim Duncan.
That facial hair. He looks kind of like Tiger Woods.
He does?
Yeah, when he has facial hair. His goatee looks kind of like
Tiger's.
Well,
then Tigers. He looks good, then.
Eh, I don't like Tigers either.
You don't like Tigers?
No. Those are guys who need to have the baby face going.
You know what I heard? Because, guys, once again, this is the fansmanship.com random musing
segment of the podcast for this
podcast.
Week.
You know what? Someone sent me a picture of a liger. Have you seen how big those things are? No, I mean, have you seen how big a liger is?
I used to play on a soccer team called the Ligers.
Must have been big.
A liger's a cross between lions and tigers, bred for their skills in magic, according to Napoleon Dynamite.
I'm just saying, someone sent me a picture of a liger. There's been crazier things that have happened.
The Ligers and Chupacabras live together.
Supposedly, there's that one famous sea monster or whatever. You know,
the Loch Ness.
The Loch Ness. I mean, if there's the Loch Ness, then
there can be a liger.
There's a liger.
Sure. Do ligers fly? That's my question.
What if it? Okay. The next franchise needs to be called the Ligers.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay, the Las Vegas Ligers.
Awesome.
Because that just makes sense. Because
it has some alliteration.
No protein from Las Vegas is gonna ever really do well. I don't think so. You might as well at least have
call the
alliteration and the Ligers and.
Yeah.
Anyways, so guys, we're gonna finally move into our Super Bowl picks here.
Since Andy's not here, I'll let you know what his Super Bowl pick is. And so that you guys know, Andy's of course a Packers fan. He has been for a long time. He is pretty excited about this NFL offseason. He's glad that the lockout is over, and he's picking Green Bay once again over San Diego.
I'm disturbed by that.
Is this the first year that San Diego finally gets over the hump?
Absolutely not.
Have we forgotten about him? Who knows? Andy thinks Green Bay over San Diego.
What good has San Diego ever been?
All San Diego's
ever been is LT.
Chargers.
When they let LT walk, it was done.
Phillip Rivers is a baller. I think it could happen if they stay healthy.
There's no way.
Go ahead. Tell me your picks for the Super Bowl.
I'm taking the New Orleans Saints. They're going to come back and have a big year. No one's expecting it. They're hungry. They got knocked off by Marshawn last season. It's not going to happen again this year. And I want to say on paper it's the Green Bay Packers, but we all know it's almost impossible to repeat in this free agent era.
Yep.
So I'm going to go against the grain and not too much because New Orleans is still a hot pick. New Orleans is going to overtake the Patriots.
Wow. Yeah, this NFL season's tough. Two teams that I think are going to be better than people think are going to be the Redskins and the Texans. That being said, both of them are going to, I think, win a playoff game. Redskins and Texans. That one's for you, Dave. Super Bowl picks that I have, though, are not the Redskins and Texans. The Super Bowl picks that I have are actually the Falcons in the NFC.
That's a good pick.
And in the AFC, the AFC is so damn hard. I'm going to say the Jets get over the hump this year. I'm going to say Falcons, Jets, and I'm going to say the Jets over the Falcons in the Super Bowl.
Jets, interesting. Mark Sanchez is a Super Bowl quarterback.
J-E-T-S, Jets.
You're also an LA fan, so that makes sense, because he was a USC Trojan.
I'm a UCLA fan.
I know, but you still kind of go for those...
White pants. Mark Sanchez.
I like Mark Sanchez. He's not a Super Bowl quarterback, though.
No? Okay. All right. That's just like, you know, your opinion,
Redskins.
Man. The Redskins are going to be better
Redskins.
Than you think.
This is why you guys should never listen to Owen Mayne.
Better than you
Redskins?
Think.
Redskins?
Better than you think.
Better than who?
They're going to win a playoff game. They're going to get to the playoffs at least.
Okay,
but when they get to the playoffs, you're going to say, wow, Owen, you were really smart. And then when they actually win a playoff game, Dave Kiever is going to give me a huge high five, and off we go.
Okay, before we finish, last thought. How many games do the Detroit Lions win?
Ocho. 8 games for the Lions. They're going to be 500.
500?
Which is a good improvement for them, and they're heading in the right direction. Matt Millen's gone. I think it took a while for them to get that stench off.
Yeah, they were 4-12 last year, but they lost, or 5-11, but they lost like 7 games by a total of 13 points.
Exactly. They're going to be in every game.
If Stafford's healthy.
If he's healthy, and this is the thing about the Lions, and it's also the thing I think about the Chargers. It's a similar dynamic where you have guys, if they're healthy, those are both teams that can be, I mean, the Lions obviously moving up to being more like 8-8. The Chargers maybe even moving up to be close to being Super Bowl caliber over time, I think. I don't think that's a bad pick. But health in the NFL is a huge thing, especially for those two teams who've both been bit by injuries.
I'm saying the Lions win 8 games. I wouldn't be surprised if they win 10. That's this incredibly explosive offensive team, and then a young defense. Calvin Johnson is arguably the best receiver in football.
Yeah.
Stafford has shown some flashes.
Yeah. Luke, where are you watching games on Sunday?
Where am I going to be watching games?
Yeah.
I'm not going to reveal that on.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's a secret.
You don't want to see how I watch games. What are you laughing about?
I don't want to see.
You don't want to see how I watch games.
And why don't I want to see?
Well, let's just say that there's butter and a male thong involved. And we're just going to end on that note, guys. No, I do not wear a thong with butter. And let's go ahead and close this out, guys. Forgive Owen for asking the question.
I just watched him. I just asked him where he was going to watch the game.
Forgive Owen for asking the question.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you guys enjoy this. Keep checking back. Check out fantasyship.com again to read some cool articles. Look out. The podcasts are going to keep coming with some good topics, and we hope to keep you guys laughing.
We'll try to do better next week. For Luke Johnson, I'm Owen Main.
And
we'll
Andy, and for Andy Stevens.
Bye. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
See you.